people up at night?
It's not politics.
It's money. Dave Ramsey helps you take control of it, one decision at a time. Real callers, real situations, and straight talk about getting out of debt, building wealth, and finally telling your money where to go.
Where to go.
Instead of wondering where it went.
Where it went.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights 7 to 10 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative,
local,
dependable. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I've been talking about this for a while with the CRA and who the CRA governing board should be. And there are some obvious reasons why we would continue to be the CRA board as a council. About 70%, I think, as far as latest 2019, a survey was done, I guess 70%, maybe more now, were the actual governing body. So only about 30% were not the governing body.
So at the most recent city council meeting, Charles Baer, city councilman, District 2, because Sherry Myers, I always have to think about, like, Sherry was 2 and he took over when she retired. Not took over, but, you know, he got elected to the seat that she vacated. Talking about the CRA and the structure, the Community Redevelopment Agency is the, it's the city council or the county commission, depending on who you're talking about, sitting as the agency that oversees the distressed or underdeveloped area of town in which they've created a community redevelopment area. And the idea there, if you're not familiar with this, is that as you set property taxes at the baseline level when the CRA is created, any improvement in the overall value of that area then has to be in the taxes collected on that improvement, has to go back into developing that area for very specific purposes. And everybody does this a little bit differently, but what he's getting at, the question he had raised is, why should the city council, which in our case in Pensacola is 7 people, why should the same exact 7 people be sitting as the CRA board, which is exactly what they kind of basically say, hey, we're a CRA, gavel in. We're done with the CRA, gavel out. Now we're the city council, gavel in. You know, like, it's this weird charade where they pretend to be a different thing when they're not really a different thing. It's just the same people. And he's raised the question. He says, why should it be the same people? It seems like we ought to have maybe an outside set of appointees to this board that the city council picks, because those people can know the area better, be invested in the area, be focused more specifically on just the question of developing the CRA vicinity. And there's a lot of complications to the importance of this, because some people argue that CRAs are not very effective. Other people notice that, for example, in downtown Pensacola, it's a massive, like, it's a very large area, and it includes downtown, where you think, well, that's not a distressed area. That's like the gem of the, yeah, that's part of the objection. And since that money then has to go be spent in that specific vicinity, like the money that gets raised in this case, kind of in the rich part of town, now, wasn't always, if you think about Palo Fox historically, has to be spent back in the kind of prospering part of town. Well, what's the point? And also, isn't that money that should be going to the county instead of just to the city? As Walker Wilson one time explained to me, and I had not understood it before then, yeah, you can see why the county gets upset that they don't get the property taxes from the improvements in the area that is the most booming in our vicinity, or one of, arguably the most booming, because it goes back into the city. Anyway, so Charles is raising the question, should we do this a little bit differently? He's not proposing getting rid of it. He knows that's the, you know, golden goose for downtown. But he says, well, it shouldn't be us, and he's just raising the question.
Now, if the council wants tighter control, if the city wants tighter control, obviously keeping us as the CRA board would work. And if there are coordinations about, or if there are concerns about coordination, accountability, again, those are reasons why you'd want to keep it the way it is.
And as a good debater should, he's pointing out 70% of communities do it the way we do it, with the same people just wearing different hats, not even just metaphorical hats. 30% do it where they have a separate agency. There are reasons to keep it as is, because it allows the council to directly control what's going on, to have a more global knowledge of what's going on, and implement a unified vision of what to do in the city.
As far as why we'd want a separate board, first of all, when you have a separate board, you could compose that of certain members of the community with some targeted experience. You could use things like economic development, urban planning, things of that nature. We don't all have that skill set as council members. It would give another set of eyes to things, so we weren't just a rubber stamp to whatever we did as CRA.
Just like the Architectural Review Board or a Downtown Improvement Board or other boards where you find people who have a little bit more specificity or expertise. Same thing for a CRA. You could get people who are really good at economic development, or at least understand, you know, building and developing in neighborhoods and things like that better. And we're not that necessarily. We could add to our level of knowledge and expertise in overseeing this area.
It allowed the CRA decisions to be made by people who can focus primarily on redevelopment, which we're not always focused on that, and allowing us to focus on other issues. We'd still be have to review most of what the CRA did, so I think it would still give us the opportunity to have some oversight.
If they say wing nutty things, we can say no. We always would retain the ability to validate or invalidate their decisions, and so we're basically acquiring a wiser source of advisories, and why not?
We could include things, people like business owners, neighborhood residents, property owners. This would help us increase things like local buy-in, I believe, improve trust with stakeholders, which I think is something that we need as well, and just ensure that priorities align with what the community needs are rather than what our political considerations are.
The people who live in the CRA would like this better. It would give them a better sense of control and accountability over the decisions, make sure that they feel like their needs are being met better.
A separate board can also operate with some greater independence, I believe. And I know people will bring up the Community Maritime Park Associates as an example of maybe something they didn't like when there was some separation. But I think there were some positive things that came out of that process. And they can also focus, I think, on long-term redevelopment rather than short-term political considerations, which some of us have to focus on based on election cycles.
I think probably that one doesn't hold, depending on how you structure. Like if you have them appointed for, you know, 4 years or 6 years, even I can't imagine a volunteer board being appointed that way, but let's imagine then true. But otherwise, they're going to come and go with the people who are elected to the seats that appoint them. And so I'm not sure that that's really a good argument. But I get what he's trying to drive at, is you could structure it so they had more independence.
CRA boards, just like we do, have a fiduciary duty, and a separate board can, I believe, reinforce this this legal obligation and help avoid the perception that CRA funds are a slush fund used for backfilling projects we can't fund with general revenue.
And that's been the allegation, is, for example, like the Reimagining Palafox, 90% sure gets some of the funding for that project from the CRA, which you think, really? Yeah, well, yeah, because, you know, it's redevelopment. But is that a dilapidated area or blighted area? No, not anymore. That's the point. You know, advocates of a CRA say that's a success. You know, other people are saying, well, hey, why do we keep investing money there when that's not really the place that needs it? And the perception is that this is just another way to keep money focused on, you know, the rich get richer kind of perception. Allison Patton, who is the president of city council, does not believe it should be changed or restructured.
I agree that we are at a point where if we try to restructure, I think it will be disruptive to the operation of the CRA as it is right now. I think, you know, the more money that goes into the CRAs, in particular, I'd say the Urban Core CRA, the more intertwined it becomes with the city's sort of operation of that area, performs a lot of the maintenance on CRA assets, et cetera, et cetera.
Which is kind of the thing Charles Baer is trying to say shouldn't be done, is it shouldn't be just replacing basic government. It should be something extra, different, remedial, however you want to describe it. But she says, you know, putting a different set of people in there is going to change the direction of what the CRA does. And right now it's well integrated with the overall goals and funding sources for the city for all of their projects.
It seems like it could be a little difficult to bring people up to speed, to actually get another board, you know, without the history, to know what we've done in the past, what our expectations have been, what's, you know, all the work that's been done on the CRA plans. Not saying we couldn't. It just, I don't, to me, it doesn't feel necessary. And I don't, so for that reason, I probably would leave it the way it is.
So that's kind of a weird argument to me, because anybody has that problem. A newly elected official has to get up to speed, right? And I think what Charles is saying is, if we had people who served on this board for a long time, you know, somebody could theoretically serve on there for 10, 12, 15 years over time, get to reappointed, they would have acquired institutional knowledge. They would be the person who knows a lot and doesn't have to get up to speed with every election, because newly elected people could come in and say, well, that person's been here a long time. It's fine. They're doing good work. So in the end, they decided to not do anything at all. I mean, Charles raised this objection, and then you know how sometimes you're in a room and you get all passionate about something and you stand and be like, I believe that we should all go out and get sushi. And nobody else is, everybody's like, what? Are you just have another beer, bro? You know, like, that's kind of the reaction that he got, was nobody cared. Nobody was interested. Allison said what she said, and that was about it. And this was just a discussion item anyway. This is not a voting item. But this was Charles saying, I want to have this conversation, and they had it, and he had it, and that was about it. And you say, Andrew, the Supreme Court, since you have been on vacation last week, the Supreme Court has heard two major cases, one involving transgender athletes and one involving gun possession on private property. We've had a second killing in Minnesota by ICE. We had the playoffs. We've had, the massive number of stories. Why are you leading with this your first day back? Well, I'll tell you why. You're right. This is gonna irritate you. I have very definite views about what happened in Minnesota. I actually think it's. I don't know how people even argue about it, but I'm constantly amazed about the people who argue about these things. The shooting was completely unjustified. It was an illegal use of force. It was at best a horrible mistake due to a series of other mistakes. And it was at worst something really awful. But, I mean, there's no justifying the shooting. I mean, there's no way to justify it. And the things that the administration has said about it are completely unacceptable. And okay, but and? Well, okay. No, but seriously, and? Well, Andrew, don't you care about lives of people and gun rights? Yeah, of course. But can I be honest with you that what the Community Redevelopment Agency does in Pensacola, Florida, with the money generated on improved values, assessable value on the structures that are in that area. For example, the shutting down of Palo Fox with the funding in order to reimagine it, that's a CRA project. What's affecting your life more right now if you live in the city of Pensacola? The negligent homicide or worse that took place with ICE in Minneapolis? Or what the CRA does. See, we're so accustomed to just digesting in whatever it is the national media decides is its exciting, exhilarating, terrifying, horrifying story of the last 12 hours, or in this case, 72 hours. And without question, just, well, that's the most important thing that's going on in the world. Is it? Seriously, is it? Andrew, are you saying that this shooting of this ICU nurse doesn't matter? No, I didn't say it doesn't matter. I didn't even say it wasn't important. I said, is that the most important thing going on in the world that matters to you, really, in your daily lives? 437-1620, I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, can you blow up some balloons for Jack's party?
I can't. I'm so congested.
You need Sinex Saline from Vicks.
Sinex Saline Nasal Spray?
Yeah, just Sinex. Breathe.
Sinex Saline instantly clears everyday congestion associated with colds and year-round allergies with a gentle, ultra-fine mist that's no mess and easy to control.
Daddy, we need more balloons!
On it!
Enjoy life's important moments without congestion. Try Sinex Saline from Vicks. Just Sinex. Breathe. Use as directed.
Oh, how's that flu, babe? Did you take DayQuil Intense Flu yet?
Nah, I got this. Ugh, okay, I don't got this.
You stay on the couch, and I'll grab the DayQuil.
Undo your flu symptoms with DayQuil Intense Flu. DayQuil Intense Flu provides powerful relief of your flu symptoms.
I'm ready for that to-do list.
Wow, you do got this.
DayQuil Intense Flu. The daytime coughing, aching, fever, under your flu, medicine. Use as directed, keep out of reach of children.
Beads are fun.
Laissez les bon temps rouler.
Moon pies too. Traffic, not so much. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
How you play today
from this moment on is how you will be remembered. This is your opportunity to rise from these ashes and grab glory.
Good morning, 524 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News and cold. Man, I'm just glad there's no witches outside because let's just say it's cold as... Well, anyway, David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. Glad to see you've made it back from your staycation. Was it a staycation?
Yeah, but I guess I should say as a newsman, I don't really know that there's no witches outside. I just didn't see any.
Well, that's true.
So, and
that's,
you know, I don't want to
That's
over,
an important
overstate.
Distinction,
yeah,
and
let's
I'm,
just claim
I'm glad that you clarified that. The FAA and NTSB investigating a couple of plane crashes at a Maine airport that happened on Sunday evening. A small jet registered to an LLC out of Houston, Texas, crashed while taking off from the Bangor International Airport. Eight people were believed to be on board that plane. The number of injuries is unknown there. Super Bowl 60 will feature the Patriots and the Seahawks taking to the field in Santa Clara, California, February 8th.
Did you watch either of the games yesterday?
I did not.
All right. Well, the Broncos-Patriots game was so boring. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, the second half was just a blizzard, so they were just basically, you know, kicking it back and forth to each other, and there were some mistakes or whatever. But, I mean, it was just, the whole game depended on one, basically a physics error. If you're moving in reverse at 15 miles an hour and you throw a ball forward at 10 miles an hour, the net velocity of the ball is going to be negative. And that led to a turnover that led to a touchdown that gave New England their only touchdown, which allowed them to win the game, boring game 10-7. That's it. The backup quarterback, because Bo Nix got hurt, just made a physics miscalculation, and they got a turnover. And the other game was fun, though, the Seahawks and the Rams game. That was fun. PJ, did you watch either games yesterday?
I did not.
People. I mean, come on, people.
Can I just say that has to be the most scientific analyzation of a football game I've ever heard, though. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's funny because they first thought it was a forward pass, which would be an incomplete, which would be they kept the possession, or at least they could kick it. And that's not what happened because when they looked at it in review, the ball was actually moving backwards on net. You know, so anyway, sorry, David, go ahead. The Super Bowl's coming up in 2 weeks.
It is in 2 weeks. And yeah, so get your chip dip ready, I suppose. And
well, don't make it yet.
Well, no, yeah. It
It'll go
good.
Bad by
yeah,
then.
Yeah, you want to wait till probably a day before, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Or the day of, even, maybe. Tax season is here. This is probably the most exciting story, Andrew. Tax season is here. The IRS is accepting returns today.
This is the most exciting story you
absolutely.
Have?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is great.
Go on.
Look, I got my pocket protector and everything ready in anticipation of tax season being here. So IRS...
Wait. Okay, yeah. Not to... quibble early on a Monday when I'm just back from vacation, but you fill out your tax returns with a pen?
Doesn't everybody? It's the most exciting way to do it.
Okay, all right. I have a hard time imagining, even I, who I
get
do,
my long form notebook I and I do. Scribble down my notes and yeah, it's fun.
Even I who do it myself and don't pay somebody, even I do it on the computer on the PDF.
I have a little tax party. You know, everybody comes over and we, yeah,
all right,
it's a good
right.
time.
Pocket protector, you know. All right, go on.
Yeah, April 15th, the deadline for that. That's all I got, Andrew. That's it for me.
Nothing on the weather?
Is there something going on with the weather that I should know about? What's going
it's,
on?
It's cold.
No, it is
and
cold.
And it's going to be colder.
It's been cold all over the place. Everybody's cold today.
It's a reverse peak. I think, what was the time? I think 7 o'clock this morning is when we're going to have the coldest temperature of the day. Let me just look quick at my Channel 3 news here. Yeah, between 6, actually, kind of now through 8 a.m., it's supposed to be 28 outside, but 17 with the wind chill. So
it's a little chilly, a little frigid.
You know, for us, I mean, PJ's from Wisconsin, you're from Iowa, I'm from Illinois. It just kind of feels like home a little bit.
A little bit.
As long as it passes.
Now, how cold is it? You're from Chicago area, or
yeah,
were you
yeah.
Michigan?
Detroit, Chicago.
Detroit,
both.
Okay, so... how cold is it? Like,
oh, I where, didn't even look.
You know,
I
home,
didn't even look yesterday.
Home area.
I know. Last week,
I saw a
week?
Story from Iowa where it said it was so cold they were worried about trees exploding. I've never heard of that before.
Oh my God. Let's see. In Chicago, it's a degree right now.
A degree?
Yeah, it's one. Oh, sorry. No, it's negative. No, it's one in Chicago right now. So it could be worse. What was the thing I saw? Was it last week when we were having the brief flurries that we got a half inch of accumulation? I was actually irritated that with the water coming in yesterday, the rain coming in yesterday, and the cold coming, that we were going to actually miss having any kind of like second chance event, you know? And then last week we thought that wasn't going to happen. But I saw the story that said that, Jacksonville was colder than Chicago briefly, which is weird. So, oh, and then my stepdad, I was texting back and forth with him yesterday, and he says, you know, we got 5 inches of snow here in Michigan. I'm like, that's your own fault. You moved back there from Florida and then from, you know, Tennessee. He's like, yeah, I know. And he's like, but I don't hear a lot of people talking about global warming these days. And this is the kind of observation that drives climate change activists crazy. Because like, that's not how it works, man. Okay, but you got to admit, it doesn't look great for your cause. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Well, it's all about severe weather. It's about the swings in the weather. It's about the volatility of the weather. Oh, okay. Well, how many hurricanes did we have in the United States last year? Well, it's long-term statistics. You can't just look at 1 year. Okay. Well, then don't come to me when it's hot and tell me how that's proof of, you know, like, you can't have it both ways. It can't be evidence for you when it's bad in one summer and then not be evidence against you when it's not bad in one winter. If you're going to pick long-term trends and overall numbers, then sell that story. Don't, like, get all excited when it's 100 1 year and like, see, that's what we're 19 hurricanes, see? Son, be more consistent.
Fox News, I'm CJ Pop of the Wrath of Old Man, winner from Texas all the way to Maine. Fox's Chelsea Torres is in Charlotte.
I noticed plenty of spots that are blocked off, so that way they make sure people are not walking on it. No one has really walked around here. It kind of just looks like an ice rink with how flat it is, but it's just this hard ice.
In New York City, the largest snowfall in 5 years.
I figured skiing was the next best option.
The winter storm knocking out powers to millions. Tennessee had the most so far, 248,000. Good luck to catching a flight. Thousands are canceled. Federal judge will hear arguments today on whether to pause an immigration crackdown in Minnesota. This follows the fatal shootings of two people by government officers, and President Trump calling on officials in the state to team up with immigration officers and turn over people who are in the U.S. illegally. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Bit of a chilly morning, 30 degrees, cloudy skies right now. Of course, we'll get to our full forecast. That's up with Brooke Richardson in just a few minutes. The Escambia County Board of Commissioners spent more than 2 hours on Friday discussing a $189 million plan to transform the Pensacola Bay Center. Legends Global showcased their vision for an event campus that would include a renovated Bay Center, an ice rink, an event center, and even a hotel. The cost was the sticking point. Commissioners say that the county may need to cut or phase in some of those elements to avoid overextending debt. Competition with Mobile's new $300 million arena is one of their primary concerns. Commissioners plan to meet with the city in the next few months to discuss moving forward on some of those plans. Penn Air Credit Union has announced 8 local nonprofits as recipients of their 2026 Communerosity Charities Program. The charities were nominated and voted on by Penn Air employees. Recipients include Child Guardians, the Miracle League of Pensacola, Escarosa Suicide Prevention Coalition, the Wildlife Sanctuary of Northwest Florida, Operation Reconnect, the Girl Scouts of Southern Alabama, Eco Clean Marine, and St. Francis Service Dogs. Now, each of those nonprofits will receive monetary donations and volunteer support. Since 2013, Penn Air and their employees have contributed more than $500,000 to local nonprofits. Mark Butler is retired after 30 years of volunteer service with Escambia County Fire Rescue. Butler started at the Molino Fire Department back in 1995, one day after his 18th birthday. He worked his way up to assistant district chief during his career. Butler volunteered hundreds of hours during hurricanes, tornadoes, the COVID-19 pandemic, and other emergencies. The Escambia County Board of Commissioners honored Butler with a proclamation last week. Well, events in Minnesota causing some concern. In Florida, the Tampa Bay Immigrant Solidarity Network in St. Petersburg calling on governments to stop cooperating with ICE. A rally was held Saturday in Tallahassee. One woman told WCTV there that she's worried about the violence in Minnesota coming here to Florida. Now, this week marks the 40th anniversary of the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster. The shuttle exploded 73 seconds after liftoff from Cape Canaveral, January 28, 1986, killing all seven astronauts on board and shocking the nation.
Flight controllers here looking very carefully at the situation. Obviously a major malfunction.
The Challenger crew is remembered alongside the astronauts lost in the Columbia shuttle disaster in 2003 and the Apollo 1 fire in 1967. A special remembrance ceremony was held last week, with additional memorials planned this week at NASA facilities all across the nation. It is 5:35 here at News Radio 92.3, and right now we've got 30 degrees, cloudy skies across the area. Let's go ahead and get a check on our forecast with meteorologist Brooke Richardson.
It is going to be a very cold start to your day with breezy conditions. Temperatures starting off in the 20s, feeling much cooler with the wind. High near 43 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping back below freezing, 24 degrees. As you head into Tuesday, sunny skies, high near 48. And Tuesday night, temperatures dropping back into the 20s, 28 degrees. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now, 30 and cloudy skies. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money. And called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates, now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates, leave the numbers to the experts.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
Princeton Grove, a new affordable housing community in Crestview, is now taking applications for one- and two-bedroom apartments. Princeton Grove features a resort-style swimming pool, pickleball court, dog park, state-of-the-art fitness center, Energy Star-rated appliances, granite countertops, and for a limited time, Princeton Grove is offering one-bedroom apartments for $799 and two bedrooms at $1099 without any application fees. Princeton Grove Apartments in Crestview. Location, community, quality living. All starts at Princeton Grove.
When the news gets complicated, you don't need more volume, you need better questions.
Better questions.
Hugh Hewitt sits down with lawmakers, legal experts, journalists, and insiders, and actually lets them talk.
Lets them talk.
Long-form interviews, real context, and time to understand what's really happening behind the headline. Hugh Hewitt.
Hugh Hewitt.
Weekdays, 2 to 4, on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620. Informative.
Informative.
Local. Dependable.
Dependable.
Chief Justice, may it please the court. Bruinholtz's Second Amendment protects the right to publicly carry firearms. By banning people from carrying firearms on private property that is open to the public, unless they first obtain affirmative permission, Hawaii has run roughshod over that constitutional right. The presumptive ban clearly implicates the Second Amendment. It's plain text because it regulates arms-bearing conduct. As such, the burden is on Hawaii to justify the presumptive ban with relevantly similar historical analogs, reflecting a national historical tradition of firearms regulation. Hawaii comes nowhere close to carrying the burden.
So, Supreme Court heard an oral argument last week about a case out of Hawaii. Really, really interesting case out of Hawaii, where Hawaii, after the Bruin decision is the one where the Supreme Court said that if you're going to restrict the ability of individuals to carry guns, openly or concealed or some combination thereof, people have a constitutional right to do that, that you have to show there was a law in effect sometime after the Second Amendment that represents a widespread, deeply rooted historical tradition or consensus about the right to keep and bear arms that showed a similar kind of restriction. For example, if you disarm people because they are felons, you know, you say they cannot own a gun, well, you look to history and history says that dangerous people has been one place where we have restricted gun rights. Dangerous or risky places. You know, places, sensitive areas, okay? Not allowing somebody to carry, let's say, at a school or in a courtroom or at a police station or something like that is an example of a place restriction, and those kinds of restrictions had been in effect, not everywhere, but in enough places where restricting that is not thought to be incompatible with the Constitution. That's the idea. So in this case, what Hawaii did is after the Bruin decision came down, and you kind of have to understand that, you know, Hawaii being the most recent state, and Alaska, obviously, also. But they had a little bit different culture historically. They were a kingdom before they became a part of the United States, and they didn't have guns, and people weren't carrying them around. They were just a different kind of place. Even though they are a part of the United States and the Constitution applies to them, their culture and tradition and history and politics surrounding guns and possession and carrying is a little bit different than most of the rest of the country. And so they have made the argument that, look, we aren't like everybody else. We have a long tradition of people not carrying in public. And in this case, we can't restrict you carrying on a public property, but we can say that the presumption is that you are not entitled to carry when you go on to open private property, like the Circle K, okay? Or like somebody's front yard, but not inside their house. So that's what they mean when they say private property open to the public. You know, some private property is closed to the public. Your house, for example, is closed to the public. You have no presumption that you can enter somebody's house without seeking overt permission first. You have to have been invited in, like a vampire. Cannot go inside that. You, as a citizen, cannot go inside somebody's house without permission. That's trespassing. Well, similarly, if you go on to their property, that's normally fine because there's a presumption that you can go on their sidewalk. Why? In order to knock on the door. Or if there's, you know, the grocery store that is owned by private people, okay, a private company, you can go in the parking lot without permission. You can go inside without permission. You don't have to ask, may I come in? The presumption is the doors are open. You can come in. Okay, but what about when you're carrying a gun? Well, Hawaii said, because we are not accustomed to having people carry guns around on private property open to the public, we're going to pass a law that says the presumption is they've said no. They can permit you, they can say it to you, they can put a sign up, but the presumption is going to be no. And the plaintiffs in this case said, well, you've just come around the back door and tried to make it so people can't carry guns, is all this is. You know, if you put private property open, you know, you put private property into the mix, all of a sudden people can only carry guns in like 3 to 5, maybe 10% of all places that they could possibly go. This is a vast restriction on gun rights.
Its presumptive ban defies a national tradition of allowing people to carry on to private property open to the public unless the owner objects. Hawaii's threshold position that this court should adopt a state-by-state community standard lacks support in this court's precedent. And Hawaii's argument the laws of the Kingdom of Hawaii should determine petitioner's Second Amendment rights is completely without merit.
The idea there that Hawaii, because it's different, or that the traditions under the kingdom are different, therefore the application of the Second Amendment in Hawaii should be different, is unacceptable under the premise that the Constitution applies equally to all of us and we do not have to ask what state are we standing in order to figure out whether we have the right to carry. Although, with reasonable things like, for example, whether you have to get a permit to conceal carry, or whether you can require people to have a gun registration card like Illinois does, might vary from state to state depending on what tradition has allowed so far. So Sonia Sotomayor, one of the three liberal justices on the court, she says,
my question is very simple. Is there a constitutional right to enter private property with a gun without an owner's express or implicit consent? The answer has to be simply no. You can't enter an owner's property without their consent, correct? Express or implicit?
Correct, because that would be a trespass.
All right.
All right. So I can't go into your house with a gun unless you say it's okay. And this is going to be one of the key questions in this case is, but is that because I'm carrying a gun? Or is that because I can't go into your house without your consent? Is it a property right question? Or is it a gun carrying question? That's going to be one of the key distinctions that the court has to figure out here, because if you're thinking about this as a property rights question, it's entirely possible to define lands open to the public as places that you cannot presumptively go with a gun. But if it's a gun rights question, then it would not be acceptable to say that having a gun changes the legality of you going onto a premises that everybody can go onto because there is an openness about it. That's going to be the key question in this case.
You agree that all property owners could get together and say, we're denying permission, and they could put such, you know, placards up in their window, and then you would still not be able to carry a gun on 97% of the property in Hawaii?
Yes, Justice. Every private property owner has the right to affirmatively put up a sign or otherwise not give permission for people to enter property with a firearm.
So can a person, this is Amy Coney Barrett, is it possible for a person who owns a property? Again, the grocery store is a great example of this. It's not a sensitive place. It's open to the public. It's privately owned, okay? Can the, you know, grocery store owner put up a sign that says, you're allowed to come, but you can't bring a gun? Yes, obviously. It's private property. And in case it's, you know, a little, just to wrap your brain around what we're really talking about here, can a private property owner put up a sign that says, nobody who's a Christian can come on this property? It's a little more difficult, okay, because then you start to have viewpoint discrimination. It's a retail establishment. But if it's your home, because access to the market is one of those things where we believe that you shouldn't, you know, you have to be non-discriminatory in your, but you could probably do it. Could you put up a sign that says, no praying on these premises? Well, of course. Because it's private speech, which is normally protected by the First Amendment, but on private property. You could put up a sign that said that. You could put up a sign that says, we don't allow religious jewelry. We don't allow political leaflets because this is our private property. That is certainly something you could do. And what she's getting at is, and she's not talking about that yet. That comes up later in the discussion. But what she's getting at is, look, if all of the owners of all of these properties each put up a sign, it'd be the same as if the state said, presumptively, you can't go on there, right? Well, the answer to that is it would have the same effect, but that doesn't mean that the state can, for example, ban everybody from carrying on private property at all. And so even though the net effect could be that everybody says no, it doesn't mean that the state can make that either be the case or make that be the presumption of what you're allowed to do.
Counsel, do you agree that the state as property owner could exclude someone? Not this implied consent law, but let's say that the state as property owner, put aside the fact that the sensitive places here include state-owned property. Assume that that's not so. Could the state, as a property owner, say that you can't carry a gun onto state-owned property as a matter of consent under property law?
Which is a great question, because she's saying, imagine the state, which owns government buildings and owns parks and owns streets and owns all kinds of places where people go all the time. Can the state say, as a property owner, you can't come on my land? Well, and the answer is going to have to be they can't say that because the Second Amendment says you have the right to keep and bear arms.
No, Your Honor, I think that's a different analysis because now we're dealing with direct state action.
And the state doesn't have the right as a property owner to limit who carries a gun, say, into the governor's mansion.
I think that there are certain locations that where...
It's all a matter of sensitive places.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the government can only restrict you carrying a gun on their property, even though they are property owners, if it's a sensitive location like the governor's mansion owned by the state or like the city council chambers or something like that. Justice Samuel Alito.
Under Hawaii law, are there any other objects besides guns that a person may not possess when that person enters private property that is open to the public?
Not to my knowledge, Your
That's Honor. A great question, too, because we're always trying to look at comparing these rights to other rights. Is there anything else other than a gun that makes you ineligible or disqualified from going on private property open to the public without specific overt consent for it? Back to Sonia Sotomayor.
Nothing about Hawaii's customs, tradition, or culture creates an expectation that the general public carries guns wherever they go, correct?
Hawaii is part of the United States, and
she's trying to defend Hawaii, who wants to restrict gun rights because she doesn't like guns, okay? Or she sees the world through the lens of an interpretive framework that allows for gun restriction, however you want to say it, okay? She wants to defend this law. And she says, but in Hawaii, they have this custom of not expecting people to be carrying guns around all the time on private property. And he says, Your Honor, Hawaii is part of the United States. As in, the Constitution applies to them, too.
As part of the United States, our national tradition is that people are allowed to carry on private property that's open to the public.
It doesn't change because it's Hawaii.
This law is not banning you from doing that. It's just requiring you to get the owner's permission, correct?
And here, the law has always been that you had an implied right to enter onto
property. Not in Hawaii.
As... Hawaii is part of the United States, Your Honor.
That's such a great answer. Now, there's a couple of other wrinkles in this case that make it, I think, very interesting. That's why I want to talk about it with you. One of the wrinkles is that the justification, remember, the Bruin analysis says, is this a gun issue? It's clearly a gun issue. Are there any examples of laws that were allowed to stand after the Second Amendment was in place, which is for most of the whole history of the United States, that restricted gun use or carrying that's like this law? And this is the most amazing thing to me about this case. It's one of the most fascinating things. PJ, I'm going to do a quick history test with you. You ready? You excited Monday morning?
Okay, let's go.
What are the black codes? Do you know the term black codes?
I have no idea.
Okay. Black codes were laws passed during Reconstruction in the South to restrict people who were black, former slaves, from being able to exercise their full constitutional rights. There's a whole range of them having to do with property ownership and having to do with poll taxes and having to do with guns, like things that made it so it was hard to live your full emancipated, constitutionally protected rights life as a black person. The law that the Hawaiians are using to justify the restriction of carrying a gun without overt permission on private property open to the public is a black code. Like a law that restricted black people from carrying guns on private property in Louisiana is the law that they look to as, see, this is okay.
Do you think the black codes, as they're called, should inform this court's decision making when trying to discern what is this nation's traditions?
I do not, Your Honor.
Well, your friend on the other side says it should. And that the 1865 statute is a, quote, dead ringer for this statute.
The 1865 law was expressly passed to discriminate against African Americans who were newly freed slaves. And I just don't see how a law like that can be used to be analogized to this modern-day law, Your Honor.
This is the most stunning thing about this case is that the advocates for gun control, Hawaii and their defenders, including, you know, particularly Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson on the court. I don't know about Kagan. She was an interesting case in this one. She's one of the third liberal. They're literally looking at racist laws post-Civil War in the South against blacks carrying guns on private property without overt permission. They're looking at that as the reason it's okay to restrict people's use of guns, as in the black codes are why it's okay to do this.
Let me just ask you about the black codes. Justice Gorsuch raised it. And I guess what I'm wondering, your answer to him was they can't be and shouldn't be used. And I guess I'm wondering whether that doesn't signal a problem with the Bruin test, that to the extent that we have a test that relates to historical regulation, but all of the history of regulation is not taken into account, I think there might be something wrong with the test.
Now, what she's trying to do is get at the Bruin precedent itself and say the test is bad because we have these cases in history where laws were allowed to stand after the Second Amendment that, you know, if you're going to just throw out the ones you don't like, well, yes, we're going to throw out the ones that are actually racist and should have been ruled unconstitutional immediately, but we're not for whatever reason. And it's amazing that the black Supreme Court justice liberal is saying, well, I mean, the black codes, you know, that's the reason why this is okay.
There's nothing wrong with the Bruin test, Your Honor. Just on a fundamental level, the black codes can't be used because they dealt to discriminate against a small...
No, I understand why you're saying they can't be used, but it's because we've moved away from that history, not because that history didn't exist. And so to the extent that the test today is tying us to historical circumstances, it would seem to me that all of history should be on the table. And if we start taking pieces off, whether it's because we've moved away from it or we don't agree with it anymore, I think there's going to be a problem with respect to the accuracy of our test.
Now, see, this is one of the reasons I actually really like Ketanji Brown Jackson, though I disagree with her end conclusions. One of the things that she does really well is she tries to take the other side seriously and push their ideas to the limit. And what she's saying in this case is, well, if we're supposed to look at historical examples and historical analogs, well, why do we throw this one out just because it's racist? Well, and yeah, but kind of that's part of the reason. But it's a fascinating argument. Anyway, I am very confident that the Supreme Court is going to rule on this next summer and they're going to strike down Hawaii's law. It's at least going to be a 6-2 decision. It might wind up being a 6-3 decision. It might wind up being a 7-2 decision. I can't see it being a 9-0 or an 8-1, but I do think that they're going to strike down this law because this law is designed to restrict carrying of guns. And there's no basis for having this historically. 555 on, but it's a fascinating, because it makes you think about private property rights and gun rights and this bizarre case where they're actually using the black codes as a, liberals are using the black codes as a justification, which is amazing to watch. Anyway, 555 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Ladies, join us to be the impact in 2026. I'm Martha Holden, president of Impact 100 Pensacola, a women's organization that has given over $18 million to nonprofits right here. Meet other members and hear about the impact our funding has made at meet and mingle sessions through mid-February. Women 18 and older are invited to join us by March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit impact100pensacola.org. That's impact100pensacola.org.
What's fun and happening in Pensacola? You'll find out as the City of Pensacola Parks and Recreation Department talks about it here on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Join us tomorrow at 10 a.m. to find out what's going on in your resource centers, parks, recreation programs, and at the Community Maritime Park. It's a great month to get out and play Pensacola. Tune in tomorrow at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Saturday, enjoy Mardi Gras in Milton with the 8th annual Crew of Airship Pirates Mardi Gras Parade. The beads start to fly at 3 o'clock. The 5th annual Pas de Gras event will be Sunday from 11 till 4 on the closed-down Garden Street between Tarragona and Palafox. Enjoy the parade, costume contests, vendors, and fun. Find out more at visitpensacola.com. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
You're busy. You just need to know what's happening.
What's happening?
Pensacola right now
with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
The Amazing Spider-Man and the Incredible Hulk will return after these messages.
Played that one already. That's all right. It's a good drop and a great song. 6:57 here on News Radio 5:57. Excuse me. Here, this is not the Eastern Time Zone. Hey, rest of Florida, we're the Central Time Zone. David Wayne is in the newsroom. Now he's working on something else. That'll happen. We'll come back to him in just a moment. It is cold. Somebody asked me which witch or vampire movies did you watch on vacation? I don't think either, but maybe that's because I played a Vampire Weekend song and we were talking about it. It's as cold as a witch's. I don't know. Whatever. Out there, because it is cold. Oh. David, are you there now? Can you hear me yet?
Sunday.
No, he's still working on these. Trees do explode in the cold. The sap, being a liquid, when freezing, can expand. And if it happens so quickly that it stresses the capacity of the wood to also flex, because wood is flexible, it's not a perfect firm structure, it can freeze enough and it can push the wood out, and the wood can, you know, either fracture is more common, or I guess explode. I don't know. PJ, you ever heard of that before in your life?
I have not.
There you go. See, learning things all the time here on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David, did you hear that about the trees exploding?
I'm sorry, I missed it. What?
Trees can explode in extreme cold when the sap
really?
Freezes so quickly and then expands, and the tree can't accommodate the expansion, and it...
Well, what do you know? I honestly thought they'd made it up.
Every year we get like hundreds of demonstrations of the danger of dropping a frozen turkey in a giant, you know, container
right.
of oil.
But they're leaving out the real danger here.
Nobody warns us about exploding trees. The closest we get is the 90s grunge band Screaming Trees.
Well, it's a failure on the media's part, I think. We haven't got it out there. I, for one, am going to cover exploding trees extensively from now on.
You got anything else to tell us about?
Well, the power grid being put to the test by this winter storm across most of the nation. Last night, there were more than a million people that were without power.
You know, I will say, we had, pretty aggressive wind yesterday, a lot of rain, cold today, and... You know, so far, so good, for at least for power, right?
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3 WNR.